ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the federal court has found, on the balance of probabilities, that Bruce Lehrman raped Brittany Higgins at Parliament House in 2019. With the court hearing his account of what happened that night was an elaborate fancy, to use the judge's words. His defamation case failed today with the judge finding the evidence found to have proved Network 10's defence of the fact that the story was substantially true was made out. Justice Michael Lee, federal court judge who heard the defamation action and delivered his judgment today, found that Bruce Lehrman was, his words, hell-bent on having sex, that Brittany Higgins didn't consent to it, and that Bruce Lehrman was so intent on gratification that he was indifferent to her consent. Mr. Lehrman's criminal trial in 2022 on the alleged rape was abandoned due to juror misconduct. So that was the criminal trial. There were no findings made against him. But today, Justice Lee had a particularly memorable and pithy comment about Bruce Lehrman's decision to pursue defamation proceedings.
Having escaped the lion's den, Mr. Lehrman made the mistake of coming back for his hat.
Yes, the federal court is yet to determine damages and costs, but doubtless to say, Mr. Lehrman is up for more than he could pay in terms of costs, although we're not yet clear who's paying Mr. Lehrman's costs anyway. But the federal court is yet to determine damages and costs, but you would have to say on the basis of this that he has been ruined, and certainly reputationally. Joining us again on the Nightlife News Breakdown is Paul Bongiorno, veteran political journalist, columnist for the Saturday paper. Paul, welcome back to Nightlife.
Thanks, Philip. Good to be here.
Network 10's legal representatives have described the judgment as an unmitigated disaster for Bruce Lehrman. Lawyer Justin Quill says the decision vindicated Network 10 and he praised Brittany Higgins's bravery.
It's got to be said, was particularly brave to come to court, and unlike most rape victims, come to court having chosen not to have anonymity and give her evidence in the glare of publicity and spotlight.
Well, once again, as we saw in the Ben Robert Smith case, Paul, it's an uncertain road when you launch defamation actions, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And when you then have to, in a sense, defend why you have launched the action, and therefore you've got to be put in the witness box, unlike in a criminal trial, and you've got to be cross-examined. And it's here that Justice Lee found Bruce Lehrman to be very wanting. There's one thing that did occur to me. The judge said that while he found Brittany Higgins to be something of an unsatisfactory witness, he found that her evidence about the rape was credible and having the ring of truth about it. Now, it's interesting, and we'll never know this thanks to the aborted criminal trial, but reports subsequently showed that the jury too found that that Higgins was a credible witness in this regard. But anyway, moving on from that, we now do have the federal court having found that Higgins was raped, and the other point to come out of this, and I did see a couple of legal commentators saying that, oh, yes, but this is not the way to go. She shouldn't have gone to the media. She should have gone to the police and the courts. Well, I know that Lisa Wilkinson said after the finding that, you know, she hopes that other women who have been victims will now be, emboldened or be brave enough to come forward. I would say the whole sorry saga would probably scare more women away than encourage them to come forward.
You'd have to think so.
Philip, I think the other thing to remember about this, in coming forward in the way she did, Higgins actually lifted a lid on a culture at Parliament House and within politics, the media more broadly, and staff that was bullying and sexually harassing. And this led to the very thorough inquiry into what was going on in parliamentary workplaces with reforms that are still to be finally legislated. Katie Gallagher, the finance minister, brought into the parliament at the beginning of this month the final part the Independent Parliamentary Standards Commission, still to be legislated, but this commission will be powerful and will be able to impose penalties on politicians and others if they're found to have, committed serious misbehaviour. Now, there's a fair bit of controversy about what they can do, but apparently they may be able to fine, if not sack, parliamentarians. Apparently only people can sack parliamentarians. But look, what I'm saying there is that the Higgins saga has a legacy of reform, and I've been in Parliament House Canberra since January 1988, and I can say that there has been a definite development in the culture of Parliament House over that period, and that what we're getting now are attitudes, in my view, far more enlightened than they were a couple of decades ago.
Yes, it's interesting. As you say, Mr. Lehman may appeal. It remains to be seen on what grounds, and certainly his reputation after this has been pretty much trashed, you would think, given Justice Lee's words, and we've only chosen some of them here.
I got a chance to look at a fair bit of the judgment, and it was absolutely brilliant in the way in which he crossed every I, crossed every T and dotted every I, as they say. And the word around Parliament House is that Justice Lee came very close to be appointed top of the federal court. The Attorney General ended up giving it to an eminent female jurist, but Lee is held in very high regard, and I would imagine that the way in which he brought down this judgment today would only add to his reputation.
Yes. As I say, interesting things to yet this endless saga, which seems to suck everybody into its vortex. One of them, of course, who's been funding Mr. Lehman. And secondly, of course, there's an action in Western Australia, isn't there, that the former defence minister Higgins over this. And I don't know what effect this finding has on that. But,
Exactly. The judge called the whole affair an omni-shambles. It does look like, you remember the old story of the tar baby? Whoever touched the tar baby to it. This omni-shambles certainly fits into that, doesn't
look,
it?
Look, on to an infinitely more serious matter, and this is the Israeli-Gaza war and the involvement of Iran after Israel and its allies fended off an Iranian-led attack of more than 300 missiles and drones on the weekend. Its deputy ambassador to Australia, Chris Cantor, now says it's in everyone's interest to reduce the military capabilities of Iran and its proxies, and Israel wants Australia to toughen its stance against Iran by designating the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps a terrorist organisation. The federal opposition already supports this designation. Prime Minister Albanese has condemned the attacks, saying the escalation is a grave threat to security across the region. He said Australia wants there to be less conflict, of course, not more.
This escalation is a grave threat to the security, not just of Israel, but of the entire region. It risks greater instability and devastation across the Middle East.
Paul, there are divides, aren't there, within Australia's political parties as to what line to take here regarding the Middle East conflict. How are you seeing it?
Well, there are definitely big cracks are emerging between our major political parties in regard to the Middle East. Interestingly, just very quickly on Iran, the opposition, the Liberals, were in power for 10 years and they didn't follow the United States of America in designating the Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organisation. There's a very good technical reason for it from the Australian point of view, that to do that under our criminal code, we only do it to non-state actors, and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is a part of the state apparatus of Iran, and it would mean severing diplomatic relations with Iran. And the Prime Minister today said that the judgment is that by keeping diplomatic relations open, we are able to have more direct say, with the Iranians on a number of other issues, including human rights issues, which have played out in recent cases. So that's interesting. But going to the other point you're raising regarding the Middle East, there is no doubt now that we're seeing in response to October 7 that the opposition, the coalition, but particularly the Liberal Party, has positioned itself as the unswerving, unquestionable party of Israel. And which doesn't question Israel's response to the October 7 atrocity and condemns the government for not following its lead, whereas we've got the Greens Party, which is unquestionably the party of the Palestinians and is attacking the Albanese government precisely for being too pro-Israel. And in the middle, you have the Prime Minister of Australia, who's there not to divide the country, that is Australia, but to unite it and to deal with the facts of the matter. And I think that what we've seen at the weekend, you know, with the massacre, you know, at Bondi, people were jumping on the bandwagon, trying to point fingers either at the Jewish community or at the Islamic.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is interesting, isn't it? On the way that social media was used in the aftermath of the Bondi Junction atrocity, that. This was a mentally ill man went on rampage in the Bondi Junction Westfield Shopping Centre, killing a number of people. But what happened on social media was actually quite disturbing in a way, wasn't it?
Well, it absolutely was, but it spilled over into the mainstream media, and there's a lesson to be learned here. Channel 7, you know, went to air with the idea that someone called Abraham Cohen, you know, was the perpetrator.
That's
You know, well,
and it just took off. Mr. Cohen is a Jewish man, and it just took off that he was the perpetrator. And
you know, and that then feeds into the anti-Semitic notion that all Jews are somehow terrorists. Mm. You know, I mean, but then social media on the other side was also raising the question: No, it wasn't a Jewish person; it was a Muslim. You know, so
here we go.
Well, here we go. And when Albanese talks about social cohesion, this is a real thing, and something that we should be very aware and sensitive to. The other point to make, of course, is that there is no doubt that the Jewish community in Australia does feel under threat, but also the Islamic and Middle Eastern communities do also feel ignored and sidelined. And this has got big political ramifications, particularly, I think, for the Labor Party. You know, while that can't, as it were, determine the response of our federal government, you know, in the build-up to what's looking like a fairly, you know, hard-fought election, the three or four seats with the strong Jewish population and the four or five with strong Middle Eastern populations, they do come into play in a partisan political sense.
Mm. Yes, Mr. Dutton's been interesting on this, hasn't he?
Well, he has, but it's interesting to see that after linking the Port Arthur massacre, which is ironic given what we had on the weekend, you know, to the Gaza conflict, and then blaming Albanese for not having the sort of strong national leadership that John Howard had in response to Port Arthur, that overreach exploded in his face, and I think he knows it because he hasn't been seen or heard since the massacre at Bondi. He did put quite a sensitive reaction on Twitter on Saturday night, but he himself hasn't entered into any discussion, whereas the Prime Minister has literally been swamping the radio and TV airwaves with strong messages of not only sympathy and condolences, but urging the nation, or praising those in the nation who showed courage, but also, you know, urging the nation to respond in a calm and rational way.
Mm. Yep, there is a lot to do to try and unite rather than divide here, that's for sure. All right, Paul, it's been terrific to talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Good night.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.